would he stow away to such a hellish place?
To find what was stolen from me.
And what is that?
The kingdom. You must choose between kindness for your kin or hate for your enemies.
Your strength breaks men's bones. I have the cunning to break their minds.
And night by night, we will carry out my pledge of vengeance. I will avenge you, Father.
I will avenge you, Father.
I will save you, Mother.
I will save you, Mother.
I will kill you, Father.
Heavy, heavy stuff there in that trailer. Yes, hello. Very lovely, dramatic opening. Welcome to Fan Critical. Welcome. Tonight, it's myself, Len, your host, and trusted impish friend, Gareth.
Let's go with sidekick. Hello, Gareth. Let's go with sidekick, and I'll accept. Yeah. But impish is impish, too much. That's too far.
Impish sidekick, yeah.
Powerful. Powerful sidekick.
Well, small in stature, but yes, he has powers. Maybe he has some Nordic powers. Maybe, in fact, you're kind of like Willem Dafoe in this film. Right. I'm the king, and you're my little jester that I've nurtured like a best friend, but is actually batshit crazy and ends up just being a head. Anyway, enough of that because it's kind of spoilery. But we're here to talk all things Northman, the Northman, if you will. Yes, Robert Eggers' latest film after his, what I think, amazing debut with The Witch, and then the, I would say, batshit crazy follow-up, The Lighthouse.
But I love
absolutely
it.
Absolutely mental.
I love it.
Me too. And just to say, like, if you have watched The Northman and then you're like, oh, I really like that. Well, if you want some kind of weirder stuff, go check out The Witch, go check out The Lighthouse. And I think you'll see Eggers' stylistic and kind of wacky roots. So
wacky.
You know, wacky. What a guy. What a crazy guy. Have you seen a picture of Robert Eggers?
No, I haven't. What does he look like?
Google it now. Just right, Google
I'll
it.
Do it. So, you know,
it's funny.
It.
No, it's funny. We'll keep talking. It's fine.
Okay. Cool.
It's just not what you expect. It's just not what you expect.
Okay. All right. I don't know which way that's going to go now.
Well.
Right. That's mental. He's like the smoothest kind of beard oil model.
Beard oil guy.
Yeah.
He's an interesting fellow. So The Northman, me and Gareth previewed this film in our 2022 preview. And the idea behind it was we were like, right, we love this director, but this is taking his film, or his style of film, sorry, his auteurism, to a new level. A level that, you know, has a bit more of a wider scope. I'd even be reticent to say that this is possibly a blockbuster. Who knows? It falls in that sort of zone of the year where it could be called that. And me and Gareth obviously were supposed to review this film last week. Gareth, you had gastro, didn't you?
Mate,
struck down.
I've been at death's door. Like,
yeah,
unbelievable. Yeah. No chance of me doing a podcast last week. There was, little chance of me moving, let alone doing a podcast. So it's
one of those things. Like, I was tempted to, like, oh, should we put out like a social media post? We were going to do the podcast, but Gareth shit himself. Or do we just pretend like we're just doing it this week? So I was like, oh, we'll tell him in the podcast what happened. But basically, have you seen Rick and Morty sort of, what are they called, Gareth? Not the Avengers.
Starts with a V. They are called the Vindicators.
Vindicators. There's an episode where they walk in and Rick's just, his ass is out. He's passed out on the floor and there's shit everywhere. And that essentially happened to Gareth.
And
what happened was he passed out. They had to call an ambulance and there was just shit and vomit everywhere. That's what I've heard, Gareth.
I mean, annoyingly, half of that's true. But no diarrhea was involved. No diarrhea was involved in the transaction. It was...
I think it... Yeah.
But yeah, no, I like... my wife and I both were very, very vomity, and I passed out, which maybe says a bit more about my, you know, my strength as a human being compared to hers. But yeah, I was out for the count. No,
not good.
No shit everywhere. Now I will say this though.
Go on.
Because obviously I knew you were going to come on here and give all the banter, but just to let you know, listener, Len was quite touchingly concerned actually. In the fan critical group, he messaged everybody and said, "Hey,
secret group
guys, we can't do the pod. Gaz is really unwell." And you were worried, weren't you? So I hope he's okay soon, didn't you?
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah, that's nice. If not, I've got loads of poo bags for the dog, and I thought I could bring them over.
Not needed. We don't need that.
So we also had a little situation where we needed to see this film pretty soon because we thought we were going to podcast last week, obviously, before illness. But my mum and my nan came to visit. So we're talking like, I haven't seen them for like 3 years or something. Finally, international travel's open. They've never been to Australia. They come all the way out here. You know, my nan's 86. She's doing bloody well for her age.
Very well. Doesn't look a day over 76.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think she's, you know, mid-70s. Yeah. And
I'm not that I'm a married man. I'm not sort of trying to go there.
Of course. We'll keep John away as well. What I will say is, you know, we were thinking of things to do, and my mum loves going to the cinema, and she loves like Viking and Norse stuff.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, Nan, do you want to come see this film at the cinema? And she looked at me and she said, what? She's got a very like heavily Geordie accent. I can't do it. She goes, eh. That's what she says, eh, like that. And she said, I haven't been to the cinema for ages, she says. I said, what? When was the last time you're in the cinema? She said, I think I saw Jaws in the cinema.
It's a fair while
ago. I was just like, oh my God. That's like 50 years. That's like 1979 or something. Might even be earlier.
What did she see? What was the film she saw before that?
I can't remember. It must be Casablanca or something. Who the fuck knows?
So imagine that in her, like... the latest films that I've been to see are Casablanca, Jaws, and Robert Eggers' new movie, The Northman.
Honestly, there were points during this movie. In the end, she didn't come, dear listener. She decided that was not good. And then my mum didn't come either.
I was gutted because I don't think I've had a cinema trip with your mum. And
it's funny.
Yeah,
it's funny.
I know. I lived next door to her for a number of years. It would have been tremendous. Mm. But I was like, finally, I'm getting a cinema trip with Joy. I know what this is going to be like. Sorry, Joy's her name.
Jump for Joy.
She would have been talking through the whole film. Like, this is fucking shit, isn't it, Alex?
They won't stop munching their popcorn. Fucking hell. Shut up, Danny.
Why has it got to be so loud?
You know, there were points during this film where I was like, it's a good thing my nan didn't come to see this because it's fucking bonk. Like, even though it's Eggers' most like
mainstream
sort of normal film, it's still got some fucking bonkers moments in there. But let's get into that now. The first bit of this podcast will be spoiler free thoughts, and then we'll jump into the plot and just go through some things that we really enjoyed. This is what Rotten Tomatoes has summarized, Gareth: a bloody revenge epic and breathtaking visual marvel. The Northman finds filmmaker Robert Eggers expanding his scope without sacrificing any of his signature style. 89%. Pretty good, pretty damn good. Considering I think the film is, you know, like I said, it's got some out there moments. So I want some spoiler free thoughts from you here, Gareth, and then of course the patented blueberry system. Please give it a lovely score.
I will. Actually, because it's like mostly set in Iceland, should we give it sort of, I don't know, like frozen sardines or something? That's kind of more appropriate than blueberries. They're not getting blueberries.
No, they love fermented fish Iceland. We'll give it, how many fermented fish will you give it? Same scale, 1 to 5. There can be no halves of fermented fish.
No, of course not. If you do, it'll crumble everywhere if you try and halve it.
Flaky.
Yeah. I think I brought this up in our little preview of the year podcast because this was the film that I was that I picked out as my most anticipated.
Me. So self-centered. It's unbelievable.
Anyway.
I did this.
So I am just going to say I was right to pick that out as my most anticipated film because it's fucking awesome. It is... I mean, it's drawn some comparisons in the media with Gladiator, which
I find
really strange. It's got nowhere near the mass appeal of that. And you're right to say it's Eggers' most mainstream film, but it's still weird in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah,
and there are going to be a lot of people who don't appreciate this film, but for me, like, I was hooked. The opening scene is like, just I don't know. The music is so sort of chaotic, and you're like,
the music's phenomenal.
The music's phenomenal.
Yeah,
but more precise, more specifically, it's like the music just sort of, I don't know. It doesn't. The opening scene, it's like, there's all sorts of sounds going on. It's like, way, 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 way.
It's proper boom, tribal, boom, boom, like, but Nordic tribal. You know, it's like, you know, the Icelandic clap, Gareth, is the football one. You know, the Viking noise. Hua!
The Viking clap, sort of
noise.
Yeah.
The Skyrim noise, you know, the Dragonborn noise. You're right. Like, the soundtrack is, you know, the sound is bewildering.
Bewildering and chaotic and
yes, but I love that shit. I love it to bits.
So do I, and it had me hooked from the first moment. I would like to think that's because of, you know, my Viking heritage, so it sort of tapped right into that. I was in from the start, and I was like, I know this is going to be a bit weird. If anything, I'd say it was not weird enough, because I want it to be super bizarre. But you know, it's do you know, I was just thinking, if I'm going to compare it to another film, like, this is an equally weird shout as Gladiator, maybe, but just in terms of sort of, I don't know, there are some elements to it that remind me of it. Apocalypto, is Mel Gibson directed. I love that movie.
Yes, directed. Great film.
And
underrated.
Underrated, very underrated film. This kind of reminded me of that, like, in that there's a really sort of simple, kind of basic element to the storyline, which is just, in this case, revenge. Like,
revenge.
Boy grows up, wants revenge. And Apocalypto is sort of the opposite, is more like man wants to survive. Mm-hmm. Somebody trying to kill him. It's this sort of simple, like, straight down the line narrative, but with like craziness happening all around it. I love this movie. The shots of Iceland are unbelievable. I said to you afterwards, I was like, Iceland just needs to sort of remove the gore from this and just use it as their tourism board advertising. Yep. Like, stunning, unbelievable. That alone is enough, but it's brilliant, brilliantly acted, brilliantly directed, and it is weird. It's not as weird as other Eggers stuff, but it's weird enough. I don't think it would have the mass appeal that you know, something like Gladiator had, but it's definitely got appeal for me. So it gets 5 fermented fishes.
Ah, yes, 5 of the finest fermented fishes. Lovely, lovely, lovely. You know, like you said, Gareth, this is a revenge story, and the Gladiator thing is interesting because it is a blockbuster in a way, but it's an intelligent one, and one with more style than you would usually get. You know, even when I think back to something like 300, which I also think is a stylistic sort of very, very period piece about war, battling and whatnot. I think to that, and I think that's got style, but has it got substance, you know? And I think this definitely has substance and style, but unfortunately, as we know, that means it's not going to necessarily hit the mainstream market because it isn't a popcorn movie. You don't really sit during this film and go, oh yeah, this is fun. You sit through this film going, what the fuck is going on? And then, you know, there's intense battles and abs everywhere, and you're just like, Jesus, you're just completely confused.
So many abs.
Not as many as 300, mind. That was a bewildering time for me. It inspired me to go to the gym.
Yeah.
And I still am chasing those abs.
One day that'll pay
to
off.
This very day. I actually even, Gareth, did a 300, the actual workout regime that the actors did for 300. I did that quite intensely for a few months and almost got there. But unfortunately, it's very hard to keep that up without a personal trainer. So,
let's do the Northman.
Patreon.
The Northman.
Yeah, the Northman. I actually watched the guy who trained Skarsgård. He did a video on YouTube, and the amount of food the guy ate was insane. I'll try and
he is looking unbelievable in this film, Skarsgård. Oh yeah. Oh my word.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of my notes here. But I will say, Gareth, the thing that we didn't mention about this film is it is very much Shakespearean. This film feels like a Macbeth, a Hamlet,
a Lion King.
It has that Shakespearean feel to it. It has a slight obtuseness with some of the language and some of the you know, translations and the way that they speak. It seems very ye old, but in Norse ways. And it has that thing that Eggers does brilliantly, which is it treads the line between what is real and what is in your character's mind and what is he saying is actually supernatural here. And that is something that Eggers has done fantastically throughout his films. There are always supernatural elements, but they are left up to you, the audience, and the characters to believe or not believe in what is going on. And there's several moments in this film that do that, which I absolutely love. And when he goes for the supernatural visuals, they're stunning, like Valkyries and Valhalla and Draugr demons and all this stuff. It's awesome.
Does that Valkyrie have braces?
Yeah, it was cool, man. It's like metallic war braces. Anyway, that's a spoiler warning.
That's what your parents told you when
yeah,
you go out of the dentist. No, don't worry, mate. Yeah, they're metallic like war braces.
Yeah, it's awesome. You look awesome. You're going to carry fallen soldiers to Valhalla. But yeah, the mood completely wowed me and just left me like scared and loving it. I love Norse mythology. And I felt that this film mixed, and we talked about this after the film, but it mixed basically so many of my favorite films into one, which was like Midsommar by Ari Aster, like some of the folky music and the chants and just some of the vibe, the horrorish vibe. It had The Witch, The Isolation, the dark palette, the sort of supernatural elements. Anna Taylor-Joy's in it again. And then you had The Lighthouse, which had elements of madness, you know, and just the way of that certain characters are just depicted and stuff. And I thought it was an absolute cacophony of things that I have enjoyed about sort of folk horror and sort of Nordic storylines, even things like Game of Thrones, Vikings, whatever you want to say.
And Skyrim. I know you mentioned it earlier.
And Skyrim, but, yeah,
you know, yeah. Skyrim's a big feature there.
100%. And when I see something that makes me think of all these things that I love, I'm going to come away giving this 5 blueberries, because even though it made me have nostalgia for those films that I saw, it also did its complete own thing. The visuals were amazing. Like, I think he's done a fantastic job creating things that I've not really seen before.
Yeah.
And I think any time that a film does that, like when I saw Interstellar for the first time, and you know, the depiction of a black hole, and just that was the first time that's ever been done, like in any sort of cinema, and it was mind blowing to see that on a huge IMAX screen with the sound and everything. And with this, with those Icelandic, you know, landscapes, volcanoes, the, I don't know, the Valhalla, you know, all this stuff, I thought it was awesome. So I can't praise it highly enough, really. And I'm just gutted that my mum didn't get to see it, because I think she would have really enjoyed it, Gareth.
Do you think she would have? Do you think it wouldn't have been too out there for her?
I think she would have said, oh, some of it's a bit silly, isn't it? But it's bloody good. I think she would have said that because some of it is very out there. But she watches a lot of stuff, Gareth.
All right.
She
so
loves watching films.
For any listeners who are considering taking their mums to watch it, Len says do it.
Do it. Just do it. Go for it. If you're on the fence, no, genuinely, if you are on the fence about seeing this film, I would recommend going to see it because I guarantee you'll see something you haven't really seen before.
Yeah. I think that's...
I
think that's a really, really key point, actually, is that it is, like, although it's sort of...
A linear story, very normal story.
Yeah, it's got a relatively basic narrative structure. It's like nothing you have seen before in the cinema. This is a totally unique film.
Yeah, it is unique. And I think the closest thing I could think of, I saw the most recent iteration of Macbeth with Michael Fassbender. And I saw it about, I think it's Michael Fassbender in that one. And I saw it like 4 years ago. And visually, it's unbelievable. The film is crazy, but it still like sits in that play sort of genre because of the obtuse language and stuff. And it kind of reminded me of that. So that's the Shakespeare element again. But like, definitely give it a go. I think it's one of my favorite films of the year so far.
What else has there been?
And Spider-Man No Way Home.
Oh yeah, that was all right. Film. But this is better.
Severance, not film, TV show, brilliant.
No, I think okay.
Doctor Strange next week. Very excited for that. There's lots of stuff going on, Gareth. Come on now. This has been excellent. Nope, which is also in our preview.
But anyway, it hasn't been. You're saying this is nonsense. You're having a go at me June? For films that haven't come out yet.
June
was last year.
Was it? Jesus, time flies. Anyway, let's stop talking about this bollocks. It was just bloody good, all right? I gave it 5 blueberries, Gareth.
What do you mean that's blueberries? They don't eat that.
Need to give it 5 fermented flaky fish. Excellent. Coming your way.
Yum.
Robert Eggers. I'm sure he's listening. Right, if you don't want spoilers, please switch off now because we're about to go, after this Nordic tribal chanting, we're going to go into the spoilers for The Northman. All right, Gareth, what we're going to do is I'm actually going to take it back to sort of what we used to do and go through the plot because it's not very long. But before we did that, I just wanted to say, have you heard of the legend of Amleth, who is the main character in this film?
See, I recognise the name because I've got a book. It's a lovely looking book that is, it's just called Norse Mythology.
Cool.
And I thought I'd heard the name, but I couldn't place it. It's a legit.
Yep.
Legend.
This is a Scandinavian legend, and there's several interpretations of the legend. There's like a Saxo translation, and then some other fucking really smart historical name translation. I've done my research, so don't worry about it. But basically, it's the direct inspiration. Amleth is the direct inspiration for Hamlet. So,
well, there you go.
Hamlet, the Prince of Denmark, obviously. And if anyone isn't familiar with Hamlet, I suggest you go read it because it is good. But it's, once again, Shakespeare.
Yeah, read very, watch very it. Obtuse. Don't worry about reading.
It's and that's what I mean. You can definitely tell that it feels like a Shakespearean tragedy. That there's elements of like, you know, Oedipus complex in there. There's elements of revenge. There's regicide. Families all die. Like, you know, you can see it just dripping with it. But I thought it was interesting that this Amleth character, you know, Alexander Skarsgård's character, is essentially based on, you know, Scandinavian folklore. This was co-written with an Icelandic poet, with Eggers as well, so it's got that sense of, you know, when we listen to Icelandic bands, Gareth, and sort of how we feel that they translate the landscape into their music. And I kind of feel like this guy has translated Iceland beautifully in this film.
Mm. That makes sense.
So, yeah, I mean, look, just a little bit of history there for you before we kick off the old plot. But
well, it's funny because, like, you know, I guess most people look at this film and go, oh, look, it's just this story is just copying that of Hamlet. But actually, he's going back to the roots that Hamlet copied. So, yeah,
that's right.
Shakespeare's the real fraud here.
He bloody is, mate. I'll tell you something. He gets a lot of credit, Shakespeare, but look, he's ripping off fucking fairy tales left, right, and centre. So,
making up
don't
words.
Even get me started on Midsummer's Night Dream. Don't even get me started. Anyway, yeah. In AD 895, King Aurunvandil, War Raven, pretty cool name.
Yeah, that's
returns
not
to his kingdom on the island of Hufvudsnes.
It's not as good as overseas. Not as good a name, no. Is it?
No. After his overseas conquests, and is reunited with his wife, Queen Gudrun, and his son and heir, Prince Amleth. To prepare Amleth to one day be king, the two participate in a spiritual ceremony overseen by Arvandil's jester, Hymir, who is played by William Dafoe, who is once again, William, you know, I'm mates with him, so it's William, all right?
Well, just saying, if you are his mate, he's going to be angry at you for getting his first name wrong.
Nah, we banter. We have a lot of banter, so he'd love it. He's a jester in this, Gareth.
Yeah.
He's another batshit crazy character.
Well,
which I enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's really common for directors to love working with the same actors, but I did reflect on how many actors appear in this that Eggers has already worked with. And yeah, like Dafoe is so good in The Lighthouse. He's so good in it.
Mm. He's unreal. And so is Pattinson, to be fair.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Oh, well, I wasn't going to talk about him because he's not in this film. So
true. But what I will say is, you know, Nicole Kidman plays Queen Gudrun, and I thought she was phenomenal in this film as well.
I thought she was
excellent, to be honest.
I don't know.
Now, mate, I'm telling you something. She's going through some sort of
renaissance,
bro. Every time I watch her recently, I'm like, you are really good actress.
I don't know what it is. But I find her really off-putting. I find her really, I don't know, there's something about her that just doesn't work as an actor.
She's Australian.
For me. It might be a fact she's Australian and, you know, I live with, well, two now, I suppose, don't I?
Too many of them. Too many of them, if anything. So
I don't know. I guess I wasn't distracted by her in this film or like off-put, but I was a bit like, I'm not sure Nicole Kidman's the right fit for this.
I think that hearing her name attached to it, I'd have been like, oh, that's weird. But then when I actually saw her, I thought she was very, very powerful, very sort of subdued when she needed to be, because, you know, she goes through a whole range in this film. Mm. But basically this scene with the, you know, they pretended to be dogs and stuff is proper batshit crazy. Like, it is awesome. And it's basically the king teaching Skarsgård as a child that the Tree of Kings, basically, you know, he tastes his blood and he sees the Tree of Kings and his lineage, and it's delving into that mythos of Nordic mythos, like seeing the Tree of Kings, which I thought was quite cool. Very Eggers start to this film, backed up with phenomenal sort of tribal Skyrim-esque dragonborn music, which you've heard in this podcast already.
It was also that tree and the visualization of it was, I'm going to say kind of specifically, without wanting to sound too pretentious, but it was very like Song of Ice and Fire rather than Game of Thrones. Mm. Like, it's the sort of thing that would be described in the books.
Yeah, by George R. R. Martin.
Yeah.
And they never would have shown it in the show.
No.
Because they've fucked it up towards the end. But anyway.
Too weird for them.
So the next morning, as they emerge from their, you know, weird ritual, masked warriors led by the king's brother, Fjolnir, ambush and murder him. After seeing his village massacred and his mother taken, away by Fionnir, the uncle. Amleth flees by boat, swearing to avenge his father, save his mother, and kill Fionnir.
Now,
which is what you've heard in the trailer.
I didn't realize
multiple times
until afterwards that Fionnir is Ethan Hawke. Like that.
Holy shit! I did not even know that.
No, so I
that is
I remembered
mind blowing.
I had heard that Ethan Hawke was in this film, but I'd forgotten about it completely. And yeah, when I looked afterwards and I was like, who was Fionnir? Because like he was cool. Like he was very cool.
Yeah, he was cool.
And again, I mean, maybe similar to how you felt about Nicole Kidman. Beforehand, I would have been like, Ethan Hawke as a Viking, nonsense. What's going on? But
nonsense.
Actually, in practice, phenomenal. Phenomenal. He's a great Scar.
He's essentially Scar, yeah. He is like that. So later on, Amleth, this is years and years later, is found by a band of Vikings who sort of embody the wolf. It's pretty cool. Like that berserkers.
Yep.
And they attack berserkers. They attack this little village. There's this amazing like one shot of like the battle as Skarsgård, as you see him now, with the best abs you've ever seen. Since 300.
Since Len's attempt at the 300 workout.
Correct, yeah. Walking around, just axing people to death and raiding this village. He sees a little witch who tells him, look, you got to go do your revenge.
Little witch
thing.
Who's Bjork, by the way.
Who is Bjork, yeah. Fucking another thing that doesn't make any sense, but then does work.
But Bjork,
and he's like, oh yeah.
She sort of in this film, she speaks all of her lines. She doesn't sing anything, but she's got
a
Bjork-esque way of, I don't know, talking. Like it, you can imagine every one of those lines that she says being in a Bjork song, like in that way. I don't know. She's such a, like for somebody who's made it so mainstream, she's so weird, like,
bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's
sometimes
it's cool.
The
it's
weird,
cool.
The weird ones get through, Gareth. Sometimes the weird ones slip through the cracks.
Yes, that's true.
Amleth then decides, actually, forgot about that. Got to go do this revenge thing.
Yeah.
Turns out though that Fionnir was overthrown by Harald of Norway, which is quite cool.
Yeah,
actual history
there.
Mm-hmm. And he's been exiled to Iceland. Right now, I was like, awesome, we're going to Iceland. This reminds me of my trip to Iceland when I rocked up on the coast after a terrifying sea journey, and then got to see the beautiful northern lights and the geysers or geysers, whatever you want to call them.
You just flew there, didn't you?
I did. With Godafoss Waterfall and all the amazing natural landscapes.
Landed in
I knew
Reykjavik International Airport,
yeah,
got a coffee.
That's right. But I knew that you would be sitting next to me when this film was going on, going, God, I'm so jealous of Len because he's been to Iceland.
Do you know, I'll tell you what my honest thoughts were. I was like, I'm so frustrated that I haven't been to Iceland. And I'm so frustrated that, because I know in the podcast, Len's going to bring it up and be like, I've been to Iceland.
Boy.
I'm basically in this film because I've been to Iceland. And
correct.
It would annoy the shit out of me. And guess what? It has.
It has. Exactly right. So this is quite interesting. Now, Amleth, you know, he's posing as a slave to get into this, you know, kind of gladiator-like. So once again, a callback to Gladiator. He's posing as a slave, but a fellow slave, played by Anna Taylor-Joy, is it Olga? I think her name's Olga.
Olga, yeah.
They strike up a little connection, which is quite cool. And she's kind of like a witch sort of type character who believes in like nature and the earth and stuff like that, which is quite cool. I kind of thought it was basically her continuing her character from The Witch, essentially, which I thought was quite interesting.
Thought like, you were going to say from The Queen's Gambit. I was like, well, quite different.
Yeah. I mean, she, you know, bloody good series that. Even though chess is quite dull, they made it very interesting. Shout out to one of our friends, Rob, who finds chess very fascinating. And for that, I applaud you. I really do.
He does try and talk to us about it, and we immediately shut him down.
Pawn to queen 7. Does that make any sense? Probably not.
Probably not.
Anyway, they get to Iceland and they're taken to Fiona's farm. Now, how cool is this, Gareth, right? He's been exiled to Iceland, but yet Iceland's fucking amazing and he's like the king of Iceland.
Well,
what the fuck's going on there?
Maybe. I don't think he's the king of Iceland necessarily. He's the king of...
Seems it.
He's the king of his patch of Iceland, which...
His farm. They've got like a farm.
His farmstead, yeah. Like his lands. Like he's got his lands and that's absolutely fine. Yeah. I mean, if I was going to be exiled, I'll tell you what, that's fine. That is absolutely fine with me.
Basically what ensues from here, because I'm not going to go through everything because it'd be absolutely ridiculous, but what ensues from here is Amleth is sort of playing the slave, but secretly figuring out how he's going to kill and torment Fjolnir, and rescue his mother, who is now Nicole Kidman, who is now married to Fjolnir, and they have born a son. So there's a lot of really incestuous things going on here in terms of bloodlines and whatnot. So it's, you know, Shakespeare again, but it's very complicated, isn't it, Gareth?
This is
where the mythos comes into it. One set is just that he gets this sword, which is sort of this prophesied sword, this Hellblade, that is, it can only be used at night and it needs to be fed because he gets hungry. But there's this sort of mythos around the sword. This is very Skyrim, Gareth. This is like you get given a mission and you complete these loads of quests and you can finally get this legendary sword, but you can only use it at night. And if you use it at night, it gets superpowers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. It's very Skyrim. Just to go back one step though, because I do love this sword. But to go back one step, in terms of the complexity of it and the incestuousness, it is complex because there's now a son of Fjolnir and Amleth's mum.
Queen Gundar, I think it is.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman. Nicole Kidman. Gar.
Queen Kidman. Dar.
Yeah. which is kind of problematic for Amleth, but he also has like some sort of internal like brotherly loyalty towards him, which we kind of I think that's what's being shown in that, you know, that sports scene, that hurling scene.
Yes. So they play this amazing one of my new favorite sports. I believe, Gareth, it's called Knattleikur.
Yeah.
Knattleikur.
Amazing this hasn't caught on. There's no English Premier League of the Knattleikur.
Yeah, it's like 5v5. You got to hit a ball against the opposite post. And it's also like murder ball because when it's in the middle, it's just like you can just kill each other.
Yeah.
And he saves his half-brother. So yeah, you're right. He does feel some sort of internal strife. You also find out that, you know, he wants to save him now as well. So it's an interesting situation for him.
But that scene of the canal hit for the year is, I don't know, very reminiscent of the many times.
I was going to say Harry Potter.
I was going to say yes. I mean, I know that you're a big Potter fan.
Big time.
I was actually going to personalize this even more. It reminds me of our many times together on the football field, Len. You know, I'm the young talented one, and you're the thug. Mm. But if you see me go down, if you see somebody take me out, you're in like a shot, aren't you? Defending my honor.
Definitely. Even got sent off this weekend, and you weren't there. Unbelievable.
Because of the
I'm apparently a hooligan. I'm a hooligan.
You are. I mean, that is the role that you play on a football field.
The scumbag.
Be proud of it.
The absolute scumbag.
Be proud of it. The goon.
But yeah, the goon squad. But yeah, basically what ensues is Anna Taylor-Joy's character, Olga, and Amleth basically... I would liken it to like the seven plagues, Gareth. Like they come up with multiple methods throughout several different days of slowly whittling down the sanity of Fjolnir and the Queen by murdering people viciously at night and then organizing the corpses into a horse or something like that. So they think it's like religious and that lot. Also poisoning their soldiers with mushrooms that make them kill each other and sort of, you know, or scratch themselves. Their own face off. As well as, you know, eventually Amleth basically confronts the Queen and says, look, hey, I'm your son.
I'm here to save you.
I'm here to save you. And there's this moment in the film where you always knew there was going to be a turn. Like, how is this going to twist? And it's essentially the Queen instigated the coup with Fjolnir against his Amleth's father, the King, because she actually didn't love the King at all. And she actually loved Fjolnir because he was caring and this lot. And she ordered the death of her son.
Caring and this Amleth. Lot. Yeah, put that on your Tinder profile. Oh, yeah. I'm caring and that
caring
lot.
And that. Yeah. So she actually ordered the murder of Amleth. And he can't believe this. And he can't hurt her because it's not something he believes in at this point anyway. In a bloody rage.
This is a phenomenal twist, by the way. Like,
oh, yeah. I think it's really good.
I think it's really good. And it's so Shakespearean. Like,
Even the way she approaches him, Gareth, is very sexual.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she says, like, look, if you kill Fjolnir, you can have me as your own. And that's that Oedipus thing coming into it again, which is kind of fucked up. Well, it's not kind of fucked up. It is fucked up.
How many cinema trips have you been on with your mum?
Don't go there. Anyway, he runs out and in a bloody rage, he executes their oldest born, which was...
So his cousin.
No relation to his cousin. And cuts out his heart, which prevents his...
passage.
His funeral get passage to Valhalla, essentially, which infuriates Fjolnir even more. Fjolnir now knows that Amleth is the one who's doing this. He realizes he should have killed him ages ago. He thought he was dead. And, you know, Anna Taylor-Joy at this point and Amleth try to flee. And, you know, it's revealed that she's pregnant with his heirs. And he has a choice to make. His choice is he can leave revenge behind and start a new life, or he can let revenge consume him. And he sort of chooses the second option, or third option, which is a bit of both. He says it's a bit of both.
I think it's interesting. Yeah. I think because you're right. That's the initial dilemma is, do you let go of revenge, or do you let revenge destroy you? And he decides, I'm going to let go and go and start a new life. But
he does.
What he concludes is kind of it's a logical development. Is he then finds out that Olga's
pregnant
with his kids.
With twins.
And he says, well, this isn't about revenge anymore. My kids aren't going to be safe whilst Fjolnir is alive.
Yeah, because revenge breeds revenge. It never ends. It's like classic stories that you hear. It always just goes too far. No one can ever let it go. Big theme of The Last of Us Part 2, for anyone who's played that. Revenge. It's a horrible, horrible thing.
Let it go.
And let it go. Frozen. Lovely, lovely film. But I will say that he sort of says, look, you know, you take our kids, they're the heirs to the throne, they're going to be kings and queens. I need to go finish this. So he swims back.
Because of the
he swims
Nordic
back.
Thing, finish.
Yeah. Yeah, got that. Yeah. Good that. Okay. He swims back to coast, to the shore, with the fermented fish, where they all like collect them and that. And then he decides, oh, I'm going to fucking decimate everyone in this fucking farm.
Yeah.
Including...
He says... There's no way you're getting out of here alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He says, I'm going to kill you, Dan and Mark.
Oh, you like that? Oh, so shit.
You like that one?
No,
that is so shit.
I love it.
No, no. Then terrible. He says, no, Gaz. Then yeah. He says, oh yeah, how are you going to kill me? He says, I'm going to Estonia.
That's quite good. That's quite good. Well done. Oh, John,
John would have liked that one.
Yeah, he would have. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm impressed.
Good that.
Very good.
All right. Good. Anyway, let's crack on. So he kills his mother, Gareth, and he kills his fucking half brother.
Well,
and this is where it's full Shakespeare.
Yeah,
this is fucking full Shakespeare at this point. But this is like
tragedy. He doesn't want to kill his brother. His brother's.
Gundogan or whatever he's called, yeah.
You play for Man City, does he? Ilkay Gundogan. He's on his back stabbing him like a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus Christ, stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, it's a brutal scene. It's just so brutal. Like, he murders his mother, he kills his half brother, Fionnir walks in, just drags the corpses away.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I'll meet you at the gates of hell.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shit, this is going to get
I'll tell good. You what, and mentally speaking, he is not Copenhagen.
No, he's not. He's not coping very well, is he? No. Yeah,
it's called Copenhagen. It's not called Copenhagen. It's the capital city of Denmark. Copen very well. That one doesn't work.
True. It doesn't. But the gates of hell is something that, if people don't realize this is quite interesting. So the sword that Amleth receives in a sort of supernatural manner, or you're led to believe it's a supernatural blade.
See, it's a vision. Yeah,
yeah.
I reckon maybe this is, I'm not going to say a misstep, but it's one bit where I was like, because they did the whole supernatural scene where he fights the corpse. Gets the sword.
The Draugr, yeah.
The Draugr. Yep. And then sort of showed that that didn't actually happen. And
yes.
I was a
but
bit like,
did it could have. But this is the thing. It's leading into what these characters believe. It's giving you events that happen, and it's letting you interpret, like, oh, is this, you know, is there a Valhalla? Is there this stuff in this film? What is going on? The gates of hell is literally the foot of a volcano. And anyone that doesn't realize, Iceland actually has like over 200 active volcanoes on it.
Sits on divergent plates. So Iceland is literally being torn asunder.
Yeah. So you would think Iceland, cold. And it is cold. And it is very tundra-esque at times. But in the summer, it gets very hot. And not only that, it has volcanoes all over the place. And you can go to the top of some of these volcanoes. Some are small and some are very large. So it's very cool. Like, honestly, go to Iceland if you ever get a chance. It's an amazing, amazing place.
Thanks, Britannica.com.
That's okay. But the thing about this sword is that although it can only be used at night, the only other place that it can be used is at the gates of hell, which I thought was very interesting and very lovely.
And very convenient.
What ensues, Gareth, is what I like to call a ultimate showdown, a final boss, if you will, in a video game. And it does very much. It feels to me like a Naughty Dog game. Like if this was The Last of Us or this was Uncharted, this is like a final boss encounter where you're in control, but it kind of plays out with like quick time events. Like you press triangle now to block. Oh, no, spam R1 because he's got the upper hand. What I will say, Gareth, is they fight naked at the foot of a volcano, at the sort of on the side of a volcano. Imagine Mount Doom, you know,
an erupting volcano. It's kicking off.
Mm. And visually, fuck me, it's unreal. It is unreal. It's awesome. It's just something I haven't really seen.
It is Star Wars esque, but
yes,
but it's
Duel of the Fates.
But it's
yes,
but it's not like. I think that would be an easy comparison to make, but it would be missing the point somewhat. Like this is because this is based on Norse, like Viking history and mythology, and and these are places that exist, and it's how it would have been seen. So I think it's really important, and I don't think I hope that nobody kind of watches that scene and thinks it's derivative of Star Wars.
Nah, I think they watch it and think, I've got the high ground. Don't even try it, Anakin. And then he tries it, yeah. And then what happens? Yeah.
But in terms of the actual like fight scene, it's so like raw and visceral and brutal. Yeah. And so we get to a point where basically Amleth has had both of his arms like
severed,
like, they're like they are, yeah. they're fucked,
hanging by a thread.
Yeah, I mean, not quite by a thread, because he wouldn't, but but
he would die.
He yes. would be done. But it's
they're hanging by their like a couple of ligaments.
You can see he's had
a bad day at the office.
He's in a bad way. Like, even if he gets out of this, he's not pursuing a career as a spin bowler in cricket or anything.
Can I just tell you a little fact, Gareth, before we continue? Do you know they CGI'd the genitalia in this scene?
I didn't know that.
So I don't know what that says about Skarsgård and Hawke's cocks, but one of them has a little dinkler, I think.
I imagine it's... Do you know what? I imagine it's Skarsgård. I feel like Hawke would be fine.
Packs a punch. Yeah. You feel like... Yeah. Some things you can't train, Alexander.
Correct.
Okay? Yeah. You may have the abs, but the cocketh not cometh for youeth. Well, it might cometh. I don't know. Anyway,
I'm sure it works. Yeah.
Probably, just, yeah. Surely.
No, that is interesting. so, yeah, look, it's brutal and yeah, visually...
Lost your chain of thought now after the cocks.
I'm just thinking about the cocks. So
what's changed?
Luckily, neither of them go for the cock. Which is very
easy shot,
gentlemanly
as well.
Of them, but it's an amazing scene, I think, and the point that I was trying to make actually is when Amleth has both of his arms fucked, and he's like, he's so out of breath, and he's sort of
the camera's just on his face,
yeah, and he's like crying, like... sort of like, and he's like, I can't believe I've done all of this. And
I'm not going
to get my revenge, and
yeah,
there was a bit of me that thought he's going to just cut his head off and it's going to be done, and it's going to be brutal, and I loved the fact that he managed to just he knew he was dead. I love that he managed to get his final swing in. Get his revenge and die.
They both kill each other at the same time. And what's interesting about that is the whole warrior code of the Vikings or getting into Valhalla is you have to die by the sword.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is, you know, both Fionnir and you even see the vision that he has at the end, Amleth's vision of being carried by the Valkyrie with braces to Valhalla, which is pretty cool, and it's nice to know that, you know, because at the end of the day this is a revenge story, but when you actually understand the story, Amleth's been led on a sort of merry chase of the fates, as it were, whereas what Fionnir did necessarily wasn't, he's not necessarily the bad guy.
No.
Do you know what I mean by that?
I don't think we covered this enough, actually, when we spoke about the twist with Nicole Kidman. But it's such a brilliant twist because,
it's Lady Macbeth, you know. It's like she's the one convincing him to do something.
Well, but,
do you know what I mean?
But also that, like, maybe she was the victim to start with. And the father that Amleth is avenging might have been a terrible human being. And that's right.
Because she even says she was a slave.
Yeah.
She was a slave. She was taken in. She was essentially raped by this king and then groomed to give him a son. And that is essentially what has happened. So Amleth's gone on this big journey, which for him is of revenge and redemption for his family. But at the end of the day, he's probably on the wrong side of the coin here.
The truth. You know? Yeah.
Mm. And that's what makes it a fascinating story, because you're still rooting for Amleth because that's all he knows. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's his truth. That's his truth. That's the thing that he's grown up knowing.
Mm.
And then you've got Nicole Kidman's side of it and Fiona's side of it. And that's why it's a tragedy, because it's, you know, it's this idea of just mixed up emotions, storylines. Obviously, there's a lot of blood, death, but and just ultimate tragedy amongst his family.
That, you know, the whole, that you know, layer of complexity, like, that's it actually makes it a fantastic story. Like, you know, we've mentioned that it's a relatively simple narrative, and mm-hmm. I guess it is in terms of structure, but then you get to that point, which is quite close to the end, and it's like the structure, or not the structure, but the line of narrative just goes, whoa, who am I supposed to be rooting for here?
That's right.
But I love that's it. Right. I think it's fantastic, and it's so well done. And actually, now on reflection, it is Nicole Kidman who reveals that. And
she tells
and
it all. She says
it's a great scene. It is a great scene. So yeah,
Kudos to Kidman. And I guess the only thing that good that comes out of it is the Skarsgård and Olga relationship, where they make a whole new line and all of this bad blood is gone now, which is kind of like, you know, like a new tree growing, and they get added to the Tree of Kings. It's quite nice. But overall, just a fantastic film, like visually remarkable, you know, historically, and sort of the themes that it leans on are so, so interesting to me. And I just want to read more about it. Like, Norse mythology is, you know, I'm actually quite big into my mythology, Gareth, but I'd say Norse is one of my biggest sort of plot holes. I love, like, Egyptian mythology, Romans, Greeks, but I've actually not done much Norse. I mean, obviously I know the gods and stuff like that, but I don't know some of the wives' tales and some of the things like the story of Amleth and stuff like that. So I'm going to do a bit more reading into it, because some of this shit.
I'll lend you my book.
Well, could do, yeah. Lend it to me. Put a little library, one of those library front things, and put a little stamp in it. Say when it's due back. And
you get 2 weeks, but you can come back and renew that anytime you want, for as long as you want, for free. That's how a library works.
Well, lovely stuff. Well, that's it. That's it for the Northman. I think we've delved into it. I think overall our takeaway is go see this movie. I'd have loved to have had John on this podcast, because I feel like this is a film that he would have really appreciated but not loved.
Do you reckon? You reckon he wouldn't have loved it?
I reckon he... I don't think it's his kettle of fish, fermented fish. But we'll find out in the next 60 minutes what he actually thinks about it. But I do know that the next podcast we have coming up is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, hopefully in a week or so. We're going to try and see that this weekend, whenever we can. Now Gareth's not got gastro, maybe we'll, you know, be able to go to the cinema together, which would be nice.
Yeah.
And then we're going to come back to you with our thoughts on that. Like we said, Marvel feels very tired. However, you know, Spider-Man was a massive success.
Four bloops.
And we've been, five for me. And we've been looking forward to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, because it leans into some things that we really like multiverse theory and crazy alternate threads and stuff, and visuals that are crazy, you know? So tune in for that one, because the Marvel podcasts never disappoint, because there's always so much to talk about, whether it's, and there's going to be fucking spoilers up the yin yang. There's going to be fucking, you know, there's fucking X-Men in this film, for God's sakes. It's going to be crazy. I don't even know what to think was going to happen, but tune in for that next week sometime. We will have our review of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Anyway, Gareth, thank you for joining me in my kingdom of Hafnarfjallajökull today.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful podcast.
Bloody lovely. We're going to go drink mead and blood of our victims.
Gareth, raven hair, shall go and have salmon for dinner.
I, Len, CGI cock, will go and also Eat some more fermented fish.
It's important.
Thanks for
yours is CGI'd.
Yeah,
CGI'd.
Yeah, can confirm. Right. That's right.
Right.
They had to make it smaller, Gareth. That's the joke, because it was too big. They painted
just the one on your head, mate. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They painted it green, Gareth, and then they've like halved it, so it's a normal size now. Anyway, thanks for listening, dear listeners. We'll speak to you in the next one for Multiverse of Madness. Catch you later.
Why are they painting it green?
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.